From WHYY, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, co-host of Studio 2, and this is a Studio 2 Extra. There are a lot of rockers from Philly. Your Patti Smiths, your Todd Rundgrens, your Hulls and Oateses. But if you're asking which rocker is the most Philly, Kurt Vile is a strong contender.
Philadelphia's been good to me. Let's hope it don't follow too well the Schuylkill.
Over the last two decades, Vile's melodic, trance-inducing tracks have won him national attention. Here in Philly, though, the Lansdowne native is closer to a cult hero, with a mural along the L tracks to prove it. Vile, the third of 10 siblings, started out making lo-fi tracks in his bedroom, his sights set not on L.A. or Nashville, but on the Philly concert scene. He's bringing it all back home with his latest album, his Philliest collection yet. It was mostly recorded in his Mount Airy basement, and it's called Philadelphia's Been Good to Me. When we sat down recently, we started by talking about how the city inspires his music.
Philly rules because it's like any other big city, but I don't know, man. There's like different shows like every night to see. Like music is off the hook anyway, so it's exciting that just where I live, I can go into town, see all kinds of shows, and go home back into my studio and be inspired. When I go out into the world of Philly and then I come home at night, usually everybody's asleep and it's quiet, and I just look around me and I'm like, wow, you know.
This is the 99th song on my red looper.
The 99th song on my red looper. I mentioned, yeah, playing the piano late in the evening to early in the morning and both at once. You know?
And both at once.
That's kind of been my style.
I was going back to an interview that you gave to The Enquirer in 2009 where you said, I always said if I ever make it big, I'll never move out of Philly. I just want a house in Northern Liberties. There was something like in your mind from a young age of like, I'm going to make it and make it like here specifically and kind of root down here. Where does that come from?
Well, one, I have a large family. There's 10 siblings in my family. Everybody's close and we're a close family. We don't see each other every day, but like when we do, it's just like yesterday. And my wife as well, she was born in East Falls. I had kids, you know, starting when I was 30 and 32. Like my first record came out when I was 28 in 2008, and I signed to Matador Records in 2009. So I would always be thinking back in the day, not like I want to tour the world. I'd be like, I got to get into the Tin Angel or something. You know, we got to get a gig at the Fire, like conquer Philly.
Like your horizons were just kind of set of like, I want to play this club, that club in Philadelphia. Like that was what your North Star was.
Sure. And then I wanted to buy a house, and I was always striving for a record deal and a tour, but then always come home. It's just who I am. I've been all around the world. Sure, I'm biased and it's in my blood, but I look around, you know, the Wissahickon or whatever, and I'm like, wow, it's amazing that this exists here, and you know. I like that I could just bounce around. I got a warehouse space recently in Germantown as well, so I like to just bounce around.
What are you doing with the warehouse space in Germantown?
I just, you know, studio A, B, C, and D, you know.
You always loop back. You mentioned places that you wanted to play in Philly when you were younger. Do you have like a Mount Rushmore of Philly clubs, places like when you play there, you just feel like you go to another level, a list of favorites, even to this day?
We have so many great venues. Early on, it was Johnny Brenda's. First it was a bar, and then it turned into a club. And we were like, you know, we don't have anything like this. Union Transfer Open, that rules. The Met, I played there in 2018. That's the only time I've ever played there myself. I've sat in with other people. I've sat in most places, you know, The Man with Modest Mouse or something, and played the Fillmore. In the old days, it was the Khyber. I played some amazing shows and seen some amazing shows at the Khyber.
Is there one that holds a special place in your heart?
No, I mean, I just love that.
Your heart's big
so
enough
many
to take them all in.
It's kind of the way I consume music or whatever, or working on a whole bunch of things at once. I love that there's always options.
Single for this this album, Chance to Bleed, talks about old-time lo-fi rock and roll. Yeah. And I'm curious, what about that sound connected with you as a kid when you heard that sound?
Well, I think the reality is we didn't hear the sound to emulate it. We were it. Mm. Like, in the 90s, there was lots of cool lo-fi music happening. By the time I was making music in my bedroom, I had like a digital 8-track, and it, to me, it seemed pretty hi-fi, and in a lot of ways it was. You know, you can't necessarily tell that my song called Ocean City, which was recorded on my digital 8-track, is that lo-fi. It sounds pretty good.
You got a best friend now. You got a best friend, don't know how.
That aesthetic is what we grew up on. Me and Adam Granofsky from The War on Drugs was in my band, The Violet, or even before, like, both of our bands, like, really formed into what they are today. We were always in his bedroom or mine recording on our own.
This is like what you had access to, essentially.
Yeah, I remember the first song I recorded, my friend's bigger brother recorded me on his 4-track, and I heard it back, and I was literally, what, 15?
Did it, like, blow your mind?
I couldn't believe it. And I never had a cassette 4-track myself, but now I have plenty, and I love cassettes. It's funny, like, as you get older, or, you know, when your parents say, oh, these old records, we don't need them anymore. Or, same thing, there was a moment where I had all my cassettes. I'm like, do I need these? And then one day you sit down a little spaced out in the brains, you know, at home in your basement, and you play them back, and you're like, this sounds incredible. And this album, it's got plenty of mixture of cassette and hi-fi recording, and you really couldn't tell. You wouldn't be able to tell. You just know that it sounds... you can combine all sounds, like it's all just waveforms. That's the thing. It doesn't really matter how it's recorded. It's the song, etc. But yeah, as far as old time lo-fi DIY rock and roll nights, that came to me because I had the Chance to Bleed chorus, and it was the start of a tour, and we played the Otter Bar in Baltimore, and I knew at the end of the tour we're going to be in Athens, Georgia, recording at my drummer Kyle's Spence's studio. And my wife, she came to visit, and she saw my bandmate Jesse, and she said, hey Jesse, your hair's looking good, you look rockabilly, which made us laugh, and we started playing rockabilly music in backstage, and then something just sounded like old time lo-fi DIY rock and roll nights.
Old time lo-fi DIY rock and roll nights.
But it's me calling out the OG scene I came out of, or something.
Calling back to something that really struck you when you were you were a kid.
What we were doing.
I'm curious about a theme in this album. There were a few lyrics in here that seemed to be about sobriety.
My baby girls, they keep me high. Ain't on no trips though, no LSD. True love is the pure.
Those types of lyrics were bouncing around in my head. Is something about this album for you like a tribute to feeling the euphoria of life without needing substances?
Well, I love the idea that music can get you high, and in that perfect moment when you capture a song that you're really feeling, like, yeah, ain't on no trips, no LSD, true love is the pure drug for me. I was feeling that. I was feeling the music. I don't drink alcohol. I don't party like I used to. Yeah. I quit drinking in 2018, but that's the beauty, you know. You can keep them separate. Ultimately, you're getting high off the music. You don't get high to make the music. It just depends what you're working on.
is there something you wanted to call out about that?
I don't think so. I think it just in the moment, that's a concept that came up a few times, yeah. And it's basically the same thing, getting high off of music and, yeah, getting high off of true love or whatever.
This is a quote from you in the promotional materials for the album. I'm treating it like my last. I put everything into it. What's this last album, last move talk all about?
I'm not saying I'm done. I'm just saying I put everything into this album, like I do every time, but it takes a little more out of me all the time. I'm not saying it always will, but this one, I just put everything into it. In some ways, I kind of romanticize. Maybe this will be my last conventional album in a while or ever, but that's less likely because I'm always making music.
You would
music.
Romanticize that? How is that a romantic thought for you?
Well, I like the idea of putting out everything into this album. Treat it like it's your last album. Go in there like that. Just say what you want to say. Take it everywhere you want to take it. Take it as far as you can at home. Take it to your friends' studios. Take it all over the country, whatever. And just make your ultimate statement because you never know. But also, I'm working on so many different styles of music all the time. Like, what if this is my last conventional album and then I just get weird for a while or do whatever I want? I just mean it takes a lot out of you, and it should. Otherwise, you're like, I'm just going to crank out another record. This is my new record, and then I'll see you next year, you know.
But it does make me wonder what you would do if you weren't doing a conventional.
No, I'm always going to be doing some kind of music. That's the beauty. In the early days, I used to say, I used to think about it so much and be like, why am I not writing a song right now? Do I have writer's block? Blah, blah, blah. But these days, I like when I'm not writing because I know from experience, just out of nowhere, something will pop up when you're inspired. It's sort of like the concept of leaving your house just to come back. You can't force it. Sure, we get stressed and we look far into the future at all the things you have to do. But ideally, you'd be present as much as possible. And enjoying not working is nice, too. But yeah, I'm always going to be working on music. It's who I am.
When did that start in your life? How old did you have to get before you started realizing, like, I actually relish this?
I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for me and say that I think I was racing my whole life, even like just racing to get out of my 9-to-5 job. You know, like, how am I going to get a record deal? Finally get the record deal. You're like, well, this is great. I have kids, but I also have all these opportunities and I have to take every opportunity I can right now to tour, to, you know, sort of having more control of your touring schedule, to be a sane person and be a dad and all those things, you know.
Just taking it back a few years now, I was just looking around through like the internet archives and I found your old MySpace page.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's still, you can still find it.
Oh, that's cool. MySpace really saved my life in a lot of, like, that everybody's on MySpace. So then I remember when I put my song Freeway up finally and people really reacted. Like, that's how I got invited to South by Southwest. That's how I got, yeah, because then you're on the grid with other people as opposed to off the grid. I'm curious what you saw on the MySpace page.
So, like, there was, like, there's different categories, and one of the categories is sounds like, and you wrote, I assume you wrote, sounds like when you wake from a long and glorious slumber, then you realize you don't have to go to work, then you fall back into long and glorious slumber. That was your description of your own music. Does that hold up to you?
Yeah, I think ultimately, I just remember always being late for work and running to the bus that you're trying to catch. It's all, you know, out of breath from like an unhealthy lifestyle in your youth or something, you know, like that was the ultimate dream then. And I definitely sleep in now when I can, but I had to like start setting an alarm because I got to be the dad too.
But it is an interesting way to describe your own music. The sort of like the elation of being asleep, awake briefly, and then back asleep. Like, what does that music sound like? When I read it, I was like, I actually kind of think I get it, listening to your music, but I don't know how to explain it.
It sounds chill as hell, that's what. It sounds like you can just relax for once.
Absolutely. And I guess you could say it's in another way, it's a chance to bleed, just to kind of let it out.
Yeah, exactly, let it out. Chance, you got a chance to bleed. Now's your chance.
That was Kurt Vile. His latest album is called Philadelphia's Been Good to Me. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, and this has been a Studio 2 Extra. Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Hazel Mae Bryan, and Paige Marie Bessler. Al Banks engineered this podcast episode. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, and thanks for joining me. Philadelphia's been good to me. We'll be right back.
heart.